there. And I'm going to be honest with you. So far, I'm not in the pain in my back that I was prior to surgery. My back hurt some yesterday. We had some pretty bad weather go through yesterday. And, of course, my knuckles hurt, my knees hurt, my neck hurts. You know, my elbows hurt, the ends of your toes hurt on days like that. And so that's to be expected. But, man, I appreciate everybody's prayers, everybody's support, everybody's love. And I'm going to say this again. I said it last night during church. And I said it during the course of last night's Bible study because I wanted it recorded and I wanted it out there. And I'm saying this again. This last homecoming, without a doubt, the best Bethel homecoming we've ever had. As far as the quality of fellowship, the quality of the kindred spirit that was there, the love, the time spent with one another. I mean, after we would be done with the services, people would hang around and not leave. And then after a while, they'd go to somebody in our church's house and stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning fellowshipping with them. And it was just phenomenal, the spirit that was here. I hope that that same spirit was conveyed to you who were watching it online. I hope you saw that here because it was just it was incredible. And so next year, we want it, as good as it was this year, we want it to be better next year. Now, there's not anything that I can do or anything that you can do to make that better. We have to ask the Lord to do that for us because God will then make things better for us. And so put your get your schedule in at work, get your vacation time, plan on being here. Let me see if I can pull the date up. We talked to Southern Raised. And they are available once again next year. They're our friends. They are. They are our friends. And I love them. And I appreciate their ministry, their music. I appreciate them letting me play Beethoven's Fifth with them. I had more fun than humans should be allowed doing that with them. I practiced hard. But I had fun doing it. So I'm going to say August 3rd, 4th, and 5th. We try to have it the first full weekend of August. And that usually, you know, falls in right before school starts in case you have children in private school, public school, whatever. And so August 3rd, 4th, and 5th, 2018, we hope to see y'all come to Bethel. It doesn't matter if you're from Texas. Doesn't matter if you're from New England. Doesn't matter if you're from Canada. Doesn't matter if you're from South Africa, North Africa, New Zealand, Australia, England. Doesn't matter. We want you to come and be a part of the great things that God does here at Bethel Homecoming. So anyway, we appreciate everybody's love, everybody's support. Several people have asked, and I'm going to go ahead and say this. I don't normally do this, but several people asked if there was a way that they could help out financially. And all you have to do is go to our website, Bethel. In fact, let me show you how to do this here. Bethel Church Mo is the website. Let me put that on the screen for you. Let's see here. Where? Here you are, right here. Here's our new website. BethelChurchMo.com. And if you want to donate, there's a little thing up here, a little dollar sign. When you hover over it, it says give online. And you can make a secure donation through PayPal. And for those of you who are in different countries, our friend from Australia asked about a currency exchange from the Australian dollar to the American dollar. What would be the best way to do that? And I said PayPal is the best way to do it because they take care of the exchange automatically. Or you can just simply write Bethel Church, 1233 American Legion Drive, Festus, Missouri. That's our top secret broadcasting location. And your donation of any amount would be appreciated. Again, I'm very careful not to just hound people for money, try to solicit donations and so on. But people are asking, and so I don't impress upon people that they should give, but I've never turned it down yet. All right. So anyway, we appreciate everybody that helps us out every month. The DVDs that we send out free of charge. The radio stations that we run, we don't get very much, if any, ad revenue from either one of those stations. It's run primarily on the gifts and the donations of those of you who listen. And so we certainly appreciate the help that God has given us through you. And we say God bless you for doing that. All right. Now, what else did I want to start out with? There was something else I was going to say, and I don't remember what it was. Let me share with you the coffee of the day. Let me do that. All right. This actually turns out to be my favorite. This is from our good friend Jack and his family. They run Out of the Gray Coffee Company in Pennsylvania. And let's see here. Yeah, Erie, Pennsylvania. And their website is outofthegraycoffee.com. That's all one word. And I love these people because this is their bag of coffee that you get. And it's got scripture on it. Oh, taste and see. Is their logo, but that's right out of the scripture. Oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. And then it has Romans 10:13 on here. For whosoever shall call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. And I don't mind promoting these people and their coffee. This is actually turns out to be my favorite. Let me put it up on the screen here for you. It's called De Enzo, something like that. Okay. And it's an unflavored coffee. It is a combination of Guatemalan, Colombian, and my favorite, Kenyan coffee. Incredible coffee that lifts darker flavors to new heights. Now, it's got a bold taste, and I like a bold taste. Not so much a bitter taste, but a good, bold, strong flavor to it. It's unflavored coffee. It's just natural coffee flavor, and it is my favorite. So go to their website. You can order this or order any of the coffees that you want. And then our two new buddies that came to our homecoming, two brothers helping out with the family business, they run the Saratoga Cracker Company. And they left me some bags of their homemade crackers, and they are outstanding. I had two bags. One of them mysteriously disappeared off of my desk, and it was my favorite. It was sugar and cinnamon cracker. This one is the Saratoga spice and Parmesan, and I'm telling you, it tastes like... Look at the spices on here. Look at that. This is all homemade now. It tastes like pizza. Okay? I'm not kidding you. It tastes like pizza. It's got, I can tell it's got Italian spices on there and the Parmesan cheese. They make this themselves. They hand cut them. And they have, I don't know how many different flavors. They also have a selection of gluten-free crackers. These are not, but they have a selection of gluten-free crackers. A lot of their stuff is non-GMO, and you go to saratogacrackers.com. Let me put that up on the screen there for you so you can see it. saratogacrackers.com. That's their address, Middle Grove, New York. You see their phone number there. Give them a call. Go to their website. Take a look at some of their crackers. You'll love them. I ain't kidding you. This one, Saratoga Spice and Parmesan, I'm telling you, it tastes like pizza. Okay? Anyway. All right. Enough of that. Let's get to some stuff that I've been wanting to talk about. I've got a video for you from Sir Ian McKellen. You know who that is? He's a dirty old man, is who he is. Knighted by the Queen of England. He is the friend of Jean-Luc Picard, or Patrick Stewart from Star Trek. They both were in the X-Men series together. Sir Ian McKellen, the dirty old man, was Magneto. He also was Gandalf the Wizard. That ought to tell you something right there. You ought to see what this dirty old man does when he goes into a hotel room. I'm going to show you. I'm going to show you the video of what this dirty old man, Ian McKellen, does when he goes into a hotel room. Okay? In a minute. Let me read a couple stories here that came in. Parents of an 8-year-old boy who identifies as a girl sue the school for, quote, forcing their son to live as a boy. The parents of an 8-year-old transgender girl, he's a boy, have sued their private school, claiming administrators forced her to wear a boy's uniform and refused to call her by her chosen name. Priya Shaw and Jaspreet Brar say their daughter, son, Nikki, has identified as a girl since a young age, despite being labeled as male at birth. Nikki wears his hair long. I'm augmenting the story here. I'm making it non-politically correct. Nikki wears his hair long, prefers female pronouns, and says boys' clothing, quote, feels like prison. Now, how would their 8-year-old boy know what prison feels like? Makes me mad. When any adult says to a child, you may not live according to your gender identity, that is serious emotional distress. Attorney Mark Rosenbaum told reporters, there isn't anything more heartless in the world than telling a child, do not follow your heart. Jaspreet Brar and Priya Shaw are seeking compensatory damages from Heritage Oak Private Education over the matter, as well as a change to the school's policies. They state that their son, who goes by the name Nikki, has experienced emotional trauma over the situation. Heritage Oak repudiated Nikki's core identity. It refused to use the name, pronoun, and gender corresponding to Nikki's gender identity, required Nikki to wear the boy's uniform and use the boy's restroom, and failed to address the bullying that Nikki was subjected to because of his gender identity and gender expression, the lawsuit says. As a result, Nikki became depressed and talked about self-harm. He isolated himself socially and would not play with other children at recess because he could not be himself with them. He would not participate in school-related events after hours when he had to wear boys' clothes, and he felt that the school was blocking his, quote-unquote, listen to this, blocking his inner light. You know what that inner light is? That they're talking about? Paul called it no good thing. Romans chapter 7. Paul said, I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing. The inner light that they are referring to is not light, it's darkness. God has snuffed out this boy's candle already at 8 years old, having his conscience seared with a hot iron, turned over to a reprobate mind to do that which is unseemly. And he wants to hold everybody in the world to his chosen particular standard. He wants everybody to bow and cater to him because he's born a boy. He has a Y chromosome. He has the gender parts of a male, but he pretends he is a girl, and now everybody in the world is expected to bow to that. I'm not. And you know what gets me? They've got him in a private school, which means that they had a choice as to where to put their child in school, and they chose this school. It's sort of like you watching a television program and you don't like what you see on the television program. So you write CBS or you write ABC or BBC and you say to them, I don't like that show. And they would say to you, turn the channel. If you don't like that show, turn the channel. Watch something else. You have a choice. These people have a choice. They don't like this particular school. They can go to public school or they can go to another private school. It's their choice. I think this is a setup. I think that the sodomite agenda working with these parents decided that they were going to use this situation in order to break the backs of private schools all over the country, all over the world, so that private schools, non-funded by the government, have to, private school in this country means Christian school, primarily. Let's force the churches, let's force the private church schools to bow before the sodomite agenda and give in to it. You know what my problem is with that? There are churches all over this country that would give in to that. They're already giving in to the sodomite agenda. They're already caving in. They're already reading from the Vine of Sodom, which is the NIV and the New American Standard and the Message Bible and the Holman Christian Standard, the Holman Christian Standard Bible, which now is turning into the gender neutral Bible. Where will it stop? Where will the change and the transformation of the Bibles, of the churches, of the Christian schools, where will it stop? It won't. It won't stop until America and this world is laying in an ash heap, just like Sodom and Gomorrah. That's when their agenda is going to stop. Another article from the dailymail.co.uk. A new breed. Where have you heard that term before? New breed. New breed. Well, that's Joel's army. That is the Joel's army, New Apostolic Reformation, that consider themselves to be the mighty army seen in the book of Joel. A new generation, a new breed, which means, of course, an alteration in their DNA, whereby they will have superpowers. They will be able to climb in windows like a thief. Think about it. New breed of medically enhanced elite super workers who are smarter, stronger, and faster will arrive in the year 2030. That's according to this article from dailymail.co.uk. The year is 2030, and medical enhancement techniques have led to the creation of a new breed of elite super workers. Employees' performance is measured, monitored, and analyzed at every step by their corporate overlords. These elite super workers use technology to their advantage to become stronger, faster, and smarter. It may sound like the plot of the next Hollywood science fiction blockbuster, but according to professional services firm PwC, it could soon become reality. I believe it. I buy it. I don't have to read the rest of the story, and I believe it. Genetic modification is where we're going. You see me wearing my DNA t-shirt. One of the families that came to homecoming. See, the reason why I want you to come to homecoming is that I get coffee and I get Saratoga crackers and I get t-shirts. Okay? I mean, I come out pretty good on this, all right? Mucho apreciado, by the way. Ooh. That had a little heat to it. I like it. Hang on. Man, that's good. Anyway, the London-based firm's latest report draws on a survey of over 10,000 people across the UK, Germany, China, India, and the U.S., and the US. The UK and the US. It examines four potential worlds of work in 2030 with competing forces shaping the employment landscape in each. The emphasis placed on the importance of people, business, innovation, and the environment will shape how heavily each of the four scenarios will impact the future. Automation and artificial intelligence will affect every level of business and its people, whatever the case, the report warns. Megatrends including shifts in global economic power, which means America's not the leader anymore. Depleted fossil fuels, extreme weather increases in global population, and an aging workforce will also shape the landscape. In a world where business is put first and corporate is king, workers will have to strive to stay ahead and use every advantage at their disposal. Now, before I go on, let me say this. Do you know what fascism is? I know that word's used like, you're a fascist! What does that mean? I don't know, but it's you. You're a fascist. Fascism, in its true form, is precisely where America is headed if we're not already there. Fascism is the union of government and big business. Now, you think about it. When Monsanto has a new genetic alteration of corn and they want to try it out, do they go to the people of the United States of America for approval? Or do they go to a non-elected government representative for approval? They go to the government. And a non-elected government representative approves of the new genetic modification to corn. Approves of it because, number one, Monsanto, my old boss, old Ron DeGonia, he's very smart in business. And he used to tell me as a young man, Mike, you know what the golden rule is? I thought, well, yeah, I think I do. He said, Mike, he who has the gold rules. And I went, oh, that means you're the boss, right? You tell me what to do? That's exactly right, Mike. You're catching on. Monsanto has the gold. They have the money. They have the ability to influence very powerful people in government in this country. They also, there is no doubt in my mind that these same companies like Monsanto and other big conglomeration companies, there's no doubt in my mind that they also have the means to coerce government officials. invite government officials to a weekend in the Bahamas. Said government official drinks a little too much. Pictures are taken. Women are with him. More pictures are taken. Compromising things that this said government official does not want to be made known public. Therefore, he just goes along with what he's told. That's fascism. It's no longer the people. It's the businesses and the government working together for your common good, even though you don't agree with it. And we are rapidly moving toward global fascism. When companies like Microsoft, Facebook, Google, and scores of others can influence markets everywhere around the world, influence decisions that governments make, that's fascism on a global scale. So these companies, they want the upper hand in competition against other companies. I already mentioned that in Silicon Valley, where all these tech corporate companies are, some of these leaders in research and development are enhancing their brain's ability to visualize and conceptualize new technology that has never before been dreamed of before. Doing this by way of dosing themselves with limited amounts of LSD, just enough to, as Aldous Huxley said, to open a door in their mind to a new dimension so that they can see technology, not technology that is, but technology that we have never dreamed of before. And then learning how to build said technology. Francis Crick, who helped develop the idea of the double helix of DNA, in order to think of this in a correct way, in order to win the race for this Nobel Prize, he cheated. He took small amounts of LSD because his friend was Aldous Huxley. He took small amounts of LSD, opened a door in his mind, and all of a sudden, one day, voila, he has this little inner vision of what DNA looks like. Dun, dun, dun. I need music here. I'm not sure if you can hear that. Can you hear that? Can you hear that? Let me see if I can play it again here. I can hear it, but I don't see it showing up here. I wonder why. I'll have to work on that. Anyway, the new super worker coming to you, the new breed of Christian coming to you. He said by 2030. You realize that's only 12 years away? 12 years away. How close are we to mankind immortalizing himself? How close are we to genetically modified superhumans? How close are we to a world where no one dies? How close are we to that? I don't know. Because while we on one day may say, well, we're at least 20 years away from that, there could be a breakthrough made tomorrow. There could be scientists who are meditating, astral projecting, taking LSD, whereby they have a spiritual encounter and spirits actually tell them, hey, we can show you how to make Velcro. You want to know how to make Velcro? What's Velcro? Let me show you. The reason why I said Velcro, if you remember, Velcro is one of the alleged inventions that our government made by way of alien technology. Not making that up. That's what some people are saying. We know that men like Nikola Tesla and all of the inventions that he made did not just come up with them on his own. He was getting help. He was in contact with what some would refer to as aliens, but they're not. They're devils. That's who they were. And he was getting information fed to him by these familiar spirits on how to do certain things. See, I believe that. I absolutely believe that. What if a scientist somewhere taps into the right devil, the right familiar spirit? That familiar spirit gives him technology that all of a sudden now we make a quantum leap from being immortals in 30 years to being immortals in 5 years. Who knows? It could happen sooner than we think. Scientists create world's first mutant, teenage mutant ninja ants. So that's the article. Teenage mutant ninja ants with gene editing technology. It may sound like a script for a science fiction movie. How many articles have I read where they start out with, I know this sounds like science fiction, but... Do you not understand the age that we're living in? We're living in the age of science fiction reality. We're living in an age, Genesis. Genesis chapter 11. Look at what was being done in the time right after the flood. Genesis 11, the reason why God confused everybody's language. He said in verse 6, the Lord said, behold, the people is one, and they have all one language. And this they begin to do, and now nothing will be restrained from them, which they have imagined to do. We imagine to do it, and then we do it. I had a couple that came and visited us from the Netherlands few years ago. Hang on a second. And we were kind of explaining the difference between the Dutch people and the American people, because there's a difference. And I said, you need to think about this. The American people are the Europeans who decided to get on a boat and travel to this unknown land, the adventurous type people. Meanwhile, the people who would rather just stay at home, stayed at home. And that's what you have left in Europe. And he said, yeah, the Dutch look at something and say, can we do that? And I said, yeah, the Americans look at the same thing and say, how can we do that? They don't even ask, can we do this? It's, how can we do this? For those of you who actually believe it, and I do, we literally invented our way to the moon and back. We made it up. We invented it. We didn't already have the technology in hand when Kennedy said, I think we ought to go to the moon and back again. We didn't know how to do it. All of a sudden, we're doing it now. We invented our way there. We are a nation of inventors, we are a nation of innovators, and we are now a people who smoke large amounts of marijuana and take LSD. And the things that people imagined to do 50 years ago are nothing compared to what people are imagining right now. And we are quickly moving. Remember, this Bible is a roadmap to the future, not the past. Even though the past is true, it is telling you what is going to happen. The imagination of man is going to carry him beyond a boundary that God has set. And nothing that he imagines to do will be restrained from him. Whatever he thinks in his mind, he can do it. He can do it. What is it we're telling our children? You can be whatever you want to be. You can be great. You have it in you. You can do whatever you want to do. Well, what if I want to float through the air? Sure. You can float through the air if you want. Maybe you're going to be the one who invents it. And we're living in that time. So they got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Ants. Two independent research teams have harnessed the gene editing technology CRISPR to genetically alter ants. In one study, researchers at Rockefeller University modified a gene essential for sensing the pheromones that ants use to communicate. Experts say that the resulting deficiencies in the ants' social behaviors and their ability to survive in a colony sheds light on social evolution. It was well known that ant language is produced through pheromones, but now we understand a lot more about how pheromones are perceived, said Daniel Cronauer, head of Rockefeller's University Laboratory of Social Evolution and Behavior, in a statement. He said the way ants interact is fundamentally different from how solitary organisms interact, and with these findings, we know a bit more about the genetic evolution that enabled ants to create structured societies. I want you to think about the ramifications of this. Human beings, by our very nature, tend to be independent creatures. Meaning that we can, if we have to, we can get along by ourselves without anyone else's help. We can do it. But I think there's coming a time. How many people in the history of man have attempted to conquer and dominate all of mankind, and it's always failed? How many? Scores of them. You always got some guy that wants to try to take over as much of the world as he can. But then he always runs into this independence block type people who say, we're not going to be dominated. We're not going to be ruled over by you. The beast is going to have the ability to control everybody. How? I'm not sure, but I think that there is coming a time when something is going to alter mankind on the genetic level, and he will willingly yield over his independence to the collective and be part of the collective and never question the collective. That's what socialism and communism, that is the end result of socialism and communism. In order to make everybody one, we have to make them submissive to the collective. No one can be independent of that. It's just like the Borg on Star Trek. They all are part of the collective, ruled over by a queen, just like in a beehive. The hive mentality is coming. Okay, here we go. Germany experimenting with a mind-altering love drug to make people more accepting of migrants. Researchers from the University of Bonn said that humans tend to be generally kinder to friends and family than strangers. Given the right circumstances, a drug called oxytocin may help promote the acceptance and integration of migrants into Western cultures. Bam, bam, bam! The love drug, it's called. Making people just love everybody by way of chemicals. Let's see here. What else do I have here? Let's do this. Let me share some things with you that I learned. There is an article that I've had stacked up here for a while about a company called Teespring. They're one of these companies that have made their fortune on the internet, selling things on the internet. They are a t-shirt shop type company. They sell and make t-shirts. And they have a new design out now. And it features, let me see if I have a picture of it I can put up on the screen. Here we go. Let me do that. We'll do this and that. And here we go. Here's the company. Teespring now has the swastika t-shirt. Here at KA, from KA Design, we explore boundaries. We push them forward. Let's make the swastika a symbol of love, and together we can exceed or succeed. U.S. t-shirt company Teespring is selling t-shirts and sweatshirts branded with swastikas, aiming to make them, quote, a symbol of love and peace. The designs created by KA Designs and sold on the site all display large swastikas on the front. One shows the Nazi-associated symbol in rainbow colors with the word peace, another one with the word Zen, one reading love. And a third design in black shows a spiral of swastikas. They range in price from $20 to $35. Before being used by Hitler's Nazi regime, swastikas were recognized as Buddhist and Hindu signs carrying positive associations like harmony and good fortune. KA Designs is attempting to relate the now negative sign to its more amicable origins. The company even made a promotional video claiming that the Nazis, quote, took the swastika, rotated it 45 degrees, and turned it into a symbol of hatred, fear, war, racism, and power. They stigmatized the swastika. They won. They limited our freedom, or maybe not. The video continues. The swastika is coming back. What does that sound like to you? Jesus. Jesus is coming back. So is the swastika. And now, they are not wrong. They are not wrong when they say that before Adolf Hitler, the swastika was a symbol of good fortune, well-being, and good luck. Now, the Eastern version of the word luck is not like the Western version of it. When we say to someone, good luck, we are saying that we hope that a series of positive accidents happens upon you and you end up benefiting by a series of fortunate accidents. That's what we mean by luck, okay? But in the Eastern mindset, luck has a more spiritual connotation. When I say spiritual, you know what I mean. I mean the idea, the Eastern idea of luck says we hope and pray that the gods favor you with fortune. That's what they call luck. Okay? And so the swastika was a symbol for that, for the Eastern idea of good luck. In other words, we hope spirits are nice to you and do good things for you. Now, what's really interesting about this, you notice the rainbow. Notice the symbolism of the rainbow. We have in Genesis 9, we know that the rainbow was the token of God's covenant with mankind. When I bring the cloud over the land, the bow shall be seen in the cloud. We also know that the regular rainbow has seven colors to it. This rainbow here, I'm looking at it, I see red, orange, yellow, green, blue, green, light blue, and violet, I think. Six colors, I think. Am I right on that? Six colors? Anyway, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, but the rainbow in the Bible, in Ezekiel chapter 1, is the symbol for the glory of the Lord. The glory of the Lord seen in the clouds, the rainbow seen in the clouds, you're seeing a picture of Jesus Christ. In this instance, you have the combination of two symbols, the swastika, and I'll explain what the swastika means in a little bit, and the rainbow. And the swastika is a symbol for, how can I say it? I'll just say it, the Antichrist. That's what the swastika represents. It represents the Antichrist. And I'll show you that. So you have a symbol for the Antichrist and the symbol for the glory of the Lord. He has stolen God's glory. And God said, my glory will I not give to another. The only one who has the right to share the glory of God is Jesus, because that's what he says in John 17. So we're looking at a symbol, represents the Antichrist, represents him stealing the glory of the Lord, the throne of God. Because in Ezekiel 1, there was the likeness of a man sitting on that throne with the bow over his head, and that was the symbol, the likeness of the glory of the Lord. Remember, who wants to sit on God's throne? It's the devil. Swastikas have historically come in different sizes, slightly different shapes. This, of course, being the Nazi swastika. And what does the term Nazi mean? Does anybody remember? It refers to the ideology of Hitler called National Socialism. National Socialism. It is a nationalistic, Hitler was trying to promote Germanism and promoting socialism, or a socialistic type of government. Now remember, socialism and communism are all about the collective good over the independent good. In America, we are all about personal responsibility. If there is to be any achievement in life, it should be done by your own ability. Not because you were favored, because you're in a certain class, or because you're of a certain race. I do not agree with white privilege, and I also do not agree with black privilege. I do not agree. Let me talk to you just for a minute. I do not believe that a company should hire a person simply because they are black or simply because they are white. If it's fair for one race, it's fair for the other. I do not believe in affirmative action. Affirmative action says that you're going to apply the pressure on a certain company so that certain company hires a certain percentage of the workforce to be of a certain race. Folks, that's racism. It's racism, pure and simple. It says that I am going to hire this person right here only because they're black. That's just as wrong as if a company was interviewing two candidates for a position, one was black, one was white, and the company decided to go with the white guy because he was white. It's wrong either way. That's what socialism and communism is all about. It's about the collective good versus the independent good. If you're going to achieve anything in this country, America is the land of opportunity. That opportunity must be earned, not given. Does it really do children a big favor if they lose every game in their sport event and we give them a trophy anyway? Does it really do them any good? No. Doesn't. You know what builds self-esteem more than anything? Accomplishment, achievement. But not just giving trophies to everybody because we don't want so-and-so to feel bad about themselves. I don't agree with that. I think it's wrong. I think it's unbiblical. I think God put in us a spirit of independence that says, I want to achieve the utmost that I can in this lifetime. I do not feel satisfied sitting at home doing nothing all day long for prolonged periods of time. I want to accomplish something. I want to achieve something. Socialism takes that away. Socialism says, we're just going to give everything to everybody so that everybody's equal. And that was Hitler's idea. That's what socialism is all about. That's what the Nazi Party was all about. And the swastika basically embodies that. It's an idea of good luck and good fortune to everybody or no one. We must all benefit or none of us can benefit. The form of socialism in the church is called the community, where this idea of communitarianism says, and believe it or not, there are people who actually believe this. It says that none of us can be saved unless all of us can be saved. Now, is that right? Is that fair? Is it right to take salvation away from someone simply because the rest of the group doesn't want to be saved? No. The Bible says, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Those five virgins who had oil in their lamps were rewarded for having oil in their lamps and refused to give of their oil to someone else because they said, then we won't have enough. Should the five wise virgins be punished because the five stupid, lazy virgins didn't want to get oil in their lamps? Absolutely not. So that's socialism, that's communism, that's the collective mentality. Believe it or not, that's what this symbol is all about. Here's what Wikipedia says. The swastika is an icon widely found in human history in the modern world. It is alternatively known in various European languages as the Hakenkreuz, Gamadion, the cross crampone, the Croix gammée, the Filfo or Tetraskelion, and in Japan as the Manji. A swastika generally takes the form of a rotationally symmetrical arrangement, a cross, with four equally spaced legs of identical length, each bent at 90 degrees in a uniform direction to create a pattern akin to a four-armed spiral. It is found in the archaeological remains of the Indus Valley Civilization, Mesopotamia, as well as in early Byzantine and Christian artwork. The name svastika comes from Sanskrit and denotes a conducive to well-being or auspiciousness. In Hinduism, the clockwise symbol is called swastika, symbolizing Surya or the sun and prosperity, while the counterclockwise symbol is called the salvastika, symbolizing night or tantric aspects of Kali. In Jainism, a swastika is the symbol for Supashvanapadapita, the seventh of 24 Tirthankaras, spiritual teachers and saviors, while in Buddhism it symbolizes the auspicious footprints of the Buddha. The auspicious footprints of Buddha. Let me show you. Look at this. Take a look at this. There are people, not making this up, there are statues of the Buddha laying around all over India, the Indus Valley, and people go and worship the smelly, stinky feet of Buddha. This is a big thing. Now, there is something that, and you have to ask yourself, why his feet? There's something here that's just staring you right in the eye. Something, and remember, the motto is, think Bible. Think Bible. Is there something in the Bible about an idol and its feet? Dun, dun, dun. The fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron. For as much as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these, shall it break in pieces and bruise. And whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, part of potter's clay, part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of the iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay, and as the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. And whereas thou sawest iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave one to another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. The symbolism, let's go back to this. In Buddhism, it symbolizes the auspicious footprints of the Buddha. The swastika does. It represents his feet and worshiping his feet. What are they doing? Because you know the Bible and you believe the Bible, then you can look at this and say, I know what that is. That is a representation of the fourth kingdom coming to this earth. So I want you to ponder this. Here is a company. Where'd that article go? I had it. Here is a company, and they are actively, seriously promoting bringing the swastika back as a good symbol. And you know what I think? I think for the most part, they're going to succeed. Now, the question maybe in your mind is, why did Adolf Hitler, why did he want that symbol? What was he thinking when it comes to that symbol? Now, part of me says Adolf Hitler and Nazi Germany could have been a trial run of the Fourth Kingdom. Could have been. Maybe the spirits that will be working and bringing into play the Fourth Kingdom, maybe they got ahead of themselves. Maybe they tried to bring in the kingdom of the Antichrist during the time of Adolf Hitler. And God said, it's not time yet. So you're going to fail. Maybe that was it. I'm not sure. But definitely, there are things about Hitler, things about Nazi Germany, things about his 1,000-year reign. You catch that? Hitler, where did he get that 1,000-year reign from? He stole that from Jesus. He wanted a 1,000-year dominance over every nation on the planet. He wanted to rule the world, and he thought he could. And he definitely believed that he had occult powers working in his favor, which is why I think, or part of why, he chose the swastika as the symbol. It's a very powerful symbol, extremely powerful symbol. Okay? It goes on to say, this is the article from Wikipedia. There are a number of speculative hypotheses. One hypothesis is that the cross symbols and the swastika share a common origin in simply symbolizing the sun. Now, that's the second place we've seen that. That it symbolizes the sun. Another hypothesis is that the four arms of the cross represent four aspects of nature: the sun, wind, water, and soil. Do you know what you have here when you have the sun, the wind, the water, and the soil? You have the sun, which is fire, the wind, which is air, the water, which of course is water, and the soil is earth. You have the four elements. The swastika is a representation of the four elements. What are the four elements? Turn your Bible to the book of Genesis. The four elements of earth, air, fire, and what did I say? Genesis? I meant Galatians. It's a big difference. The four elements are what they call the four classical elements. Everybody who studies paganism, witchcraft, sorcery, wizardry, New Age beliefs, Jewish, Judaism, Kabbalah, Hinduism, Islam, everybody who studies these religions knows that the core power of their religion is the power of earth, air, fire, and water. Now, Paul mentions the elements in Galatians chapter 4. He says in verse 8, "Howbeit then, when ye knew not God, ye did service unto them which by nature are no gods. But now, after that ye have known God, or rather are known of God, how turn ye again to the weak and beggarly elements, whereunto you desire again to be in bondage?" And notice the next verse. "You observe days and months and times and years." Days, months, times, years. Four. "Because the four elements in witchcraft also correspond to summer solstice, fall equinox, winter solstice, spring equinox, which are days, months, times, and years. Four. They also correspond to the four cardinal directions: north, south." Uh-oh. Whoa! My microphone tried to jump and run away from me. They correspond to the four cardinal directions, the four seasons, the four elements, and all of that are veiled, secretive references to the fourth kingdom, which can be explained by Ephesians chapter 6, where we're putting on the whole armor of God because we're wrestling against principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in high places. 4. And these are a replacement, if you'll go to 2 Corinthians 11, in verse, 2 Corinthians 11, verse 4, for if he that cometh preaches another Jesus, whom we have not preached, or you receive another spirit, which you have not received, or another gospel, which you have not accepted, you might well bear with him. Now, another gospel here mentioned in 2 Corinthians 11, if we go to Galatians, the first chapter, he mentions that other gospel 3 more times. He says in verse 6, I marvel that you're so soon removed from him that called you into the grace of Christ unto another gospel, that's the second time, which is not another, but there be some that trouble you and who pervert the gospel of Christ. But though we or an angel from heaven preach any other gospel unto you than that which we have preached, let him unto you, let him be accursed. As we said before, so say I now again, if any man preach any other gospel unto you than that which ye have received, let him be accursed. 4 times. 4 times the Bible mentions another gospel, any other gospel, any other gospel. 4 times. Principalities, powers, rulers of darkness, spiritual wickedness in high places. So, go back and look at this symbol again. The swastika represents principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness of this world, spiritual wickedness in high places. Here it is here. Principalities, powers, rulers of the darkness, spiritual wickedness. Fall, winter, spring, summer. Earth, air, fire, water. 4 beasts from Daniel chapter 7. 4 replacement gospels. That's what that symbol represents. See how easy that is? It's not any more complicated than that. When you know the Bible, and you know how it speaks, and you know what it's warning of, you look at a symbol with 4 things on it, and you go, that represents a false gospel. And I want you to think about it. The gospel that you and I preach, Christ died, buried, risen again, coming again, the gospel that we preach transforms men from mortal to immortality. Man can live forever. With the crucifixion and the doing away of this flesh, man lives forever. Hitler was all about a superior race. That article, where was it? That article that said by 2030, we're going to have working in our factories superior workers, genetically altered workers, workers whose brains are tapped into artificial intelligence. What's being done now with science is no different than what Hitler was trying to accomplish through the occult. It's all about creating a superior race of man. That's what the swastika represents. It represents another gospel. Continue reading this. Another hypothesis is that the 4 arms of the cross represent 4 aspects of nature, the sun, wind, water, soil. Some have said the 4 arms of the cross are 4 seasons, where the division for 90 degree sections correspond to the solstices and the equinoxes. I think I agree with that. Here is a 1917 advertisement for swastika jewelry. This is before Hitler now. This would have been accepted. Here's what the ad reads. To the wearer of the swastika will come from the 4 winds of heaven good luck, long life, and prosperity. The swastika is the oldest cross and the oldest symbol in the world. See, I believe that. What does the swastika represent? That good luck, remember, Western version of good luck is, I hope you have an accident that turns out to be in your favor. That's what good luck means. Good luck. I hope you accidentally win your basketball game. Okay? That's what good luck means. The Eastern version of good luck doesn't leave anything to chance. The Eastern version of good luck says, we hope that spirits work in such a way in your life as to bring you prosperity and good health. That's what it means. Notice that the ad says, the wearer of the swastika will come from the four winds of heaven. Good luck. You know what I did? I thought Bible. I looked in the Bible for the phrase, four winds of heaven. Guess what I saw? In fact, you don't have to guess. Just type it in. Look at it for yourself. Jeremiah 49. The word of the Lord that came to Jeremiah the prophet against Elam in the beginning of the reign of Zedekiah, king of Judah, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will break the bow of Elam, the chief of their might. And upon Elam will I bring the four winds from the four quarters of the heaven, and will scatter them toward all those winds. And there shall be no nation whither the outcast of Elam shall not come. For I will cause Elam to be dismayed before their enemies and before them that seek their life. And I will bring evil upon them, even my fierce anger, saith the Lord. And I will send the sword after them till I have consumed them. Wow. God said that he's going to bring the four winds from the four quarters of heaven. And Elam is going to be dismayed before their enemies and they're going to seek their life. The swastika is an emblem of the four winds of heaven. Now, I'm not done. Get ready. The four winds of heaven. Do you know what brings the Antichrist in? The four winds of heaven. Daniel chapter 7, verse 2. Daniel spake and said, I saw in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. You know what that is? That's the two opposites. You know, you have earth, wind, fire, and water. Here, you have wind, air, and water, two of the elements. Daniel said, I saw in my vision by night, behold, the four winds of the heaven strove upon the great sea. And the four great beasts came up from the sea, diverse one from another. The first was like a lion and had eagle's wings. And I beheld till the wings thereof were plucked, and it was lifted up from the earth, and it made stand upon the feet as a man, and the man's heart was given to it. And behold, another beast, a second, like to a bear. And it raised up itself on one side, and it had three ribs in the mouth of it between the teeth of it. And they said thus unto it, arise, devour much flesh. After this I beheld, and lo, another like a leopard, which had upon the back of it four wings of a fowl. The beast had also four heads, and dominion was given to it. After this I saw in the night visions, and behold, a fourth beast, dreadful and terrible and strong exceedingly, and it had great iron teeth. It devoured and brake in pieces and stamped the residue with the feet of it. And it was diverse from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. You know what those 10 horns represent? They are, let me get back to this. They are the 10 toes of the image that Nebuchadnezzar saw in Daniel chapter 2. The 10 horns and the 10 toes are the 10 kings brought about by the four winds. That's what the swastika represents. It represents the four winds that bring, think about it. What was it that brought Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John? Four Gospels bring Jesus to the world. These four winds are what brings Antichrist to the world, and the symbol for these four winds is the swastika. Now again, I keep thinking that Adolf Hitler was an attempt at world domination, an attempt at bringing about a superior race of men, an attempt in bringing forth the Antichrist himself. And the swastika was the symbol of that, and still is. By the way, you see this symbol right here? You know what symbol that is? That is the symbol for the Theosophical Society of America. Helena Blavatsky herself. The Ouroboros, the serpent eating its own tail, is a representation of the new immortality of man. Man becoming an immortal. The serpent swallowing his tail. The serpent's mouth is the female, right? The tail is the male. It's the joining of the fourth kingdom with the seed of men. The Star of David, the Seal of Solomon, is not the symbol for the Jews. You don't see a Star of David or a Star of Solomon anywhere in the Bible. So I'm just, you know, and I know that that's the commonly accepted symbol for Israel, and I get it, and I'm not necessarily trying to label as heretics anybody who wears the, you know, the Star of David lapel pin or something like that. I have friends in the ministry who do that. And I don't go around blaming them for being in the Illuminati. But to be honest with you, I don't see a Star of David in the Bible anywhere. So I'm always leery of it. Then you have the swastika with a crown on it. The four winds bringing about, and think about it. Winds are spirits. Earth, air, fire, and water, principalities and powers and rulers of darkness and spiritual wickedness in high places. These are the four winds. These are the spirits joining themselves with the seed of men that bring about the man of sin, the son of perdition. Because at its core, the swastika is a representation of the X chromosome. Bum, bum, bum! Hitler and his master race. Zechariah 2:6. Ho, ho, come forth and flee from the land of the north, saith the Lord. For I have spread you abroad as the four winds of the heavens, saith the Lord. Who's he saying that to? He's saying that to the Jews. As a result of what Adolf Hitler did in Germany and in Poland, Jews scattered then all over the earth. A lot of them came to America to escape that persecution during World War II, during Hitler's reign. Revelation 7. After these things, I saw four angels. See, they're spirits. Four angels standing on the four corners of the earth, holding the four winds of the earth, that the wind should not blow on the earth, nor on the sea, nor on any tree. And I saw another angel ascending from the east, having the seal of the living God. And he cried with a loud voice to the four angels to whom it was given to hurt the earth and the sea, saying, hurt not the earth, neither the sea, nor the trees, till we have sealed the servants of God in their foreheads. And I heard the number of them which were sealed, and there were sealed 144,000 of all the tribes of the children of Israel. You see, this time, when the four winds are going to strive with the great sea and bring out four beasts, this time, God is going to protect Israel and not let her be destroyed by the one bearing the power of the swastika. And this is again from Wikipedia. In the Zoroastrian religion of Persia, the swastika was a symbol of the revolving sun. You see, the swastika, to me, always has the idea of motion. I guess because every time, and maybe it's just me, but a lot of the things that I read about the swastika, they said it's like a symbol in motion. With me, every time I see a swastika, I see my dad's garden tiller, right? You ever seen the blades of a garden tiller? They're swastikas. And you start the garden tiller up and the swastikas turn around and pull up the dirt and loosen up the dirt in your garden, okay? So every time I see a swastika, I'm thinking, oh, here we go. We're going to, you know, till the earth up. In Zoroastrian religion of Persia, the swastika was a symbol of the revolving sun, infinity, or continuing creation. In the diverse traditions within Hinduism, both the clockwise and counterclockwise swastika are found with different meaning. The clockwise or right-hand icon is called swastika, while the counterclockwise or left hand is called salvastika. The clockwise swastika is a solar symbol, mirroring the motion of the sun in India, where it appears to enter from east, then south, exiting to the west. The counterclockwise salvastika is less used, connotes the night, and in tantric traditions, it is an icon for the goddess Kali, the terrifying form of Devi Durga, whoever that is. The symbol also reminds and symbolizes activity, karma, motion, the wheel, or the lotus in some contexts. So, I have, look at this. You know where this is from? I have it right here. Okay. I'll show it to you. See that? See that? The book is Morals and Dogma. Okay? That's the book. There is a whole section. I'll never forget opening. This is the chapter. If you've never seen a copy of Morals and Dogma, there is it's like 32 chapters. And every chapter is devoted to that particular degree of the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry. This degree is called the Knight Rose Croix, or the Rosicrucian Knight, the Rosy Cross, the cross joined with the thorny rose. All right, think about that. What is the cross a symbol of? And I opened it up one time and I saw all this and I'm going, whoa. So Albert Pike says, we constantly see the Tau and the Resh united thus, like a chi in a row. These two letters in the Old Samaritan are as found in Arius, stand the first for 400, the second for 200, which is 600. That should get a bum, bum, bum. Have you ever noticed that when I hit the button for the dun-dun-dun music, I always get a drink of coffee? I've almost become like one of Pavlov's dogs. You ring a bell and all of a sudden I start salivating. You hit that button, all of a sudden I reach for my coffee and want to drink it. It's good coffee, I'm telling you. Anyway, this is the staff of Osiris and his monogram and was adopted by the Christians as a sign. on the medal, the Cairo of Constantius, or Constantine, is this inscription, in hoc signo victor eris, which means in this sign, go and conquer. An inscription in the Duomo at Milan reads, the Chi et Rho Christi Nomina Sancti Tene. The Egyptians used as a sign of their god Canobus, that's an interesting name, Canobus, a tau or a cross indifferently. The Vaishnavas of India have also the same sacred tau, which they also mark with crosses, thus the swastika, and with triangles, thus the Star of David. The vestments of the priest of Horus were covered with these crosses. So was the dress of the Lama of Tibet, the Dalai Lama. The sectarian marks of the Jains are these swastikas. The distinctive badge of the sect of Zakjapanikos is the swastika. It is the sign of foe identical with the cross of Christ. Now, this is the rantings and ravings of the lunatic, Fat Albert Pike. And he's trying to draw your attention to this idea that the symbol of the cross, though it comes in different forms, it all means the same thing. What does it mean? Here is the god of the Aztecs, Quetzalcoatl. Quetzalcoatl is a fiery flying serpent. The name Quetzalcoatl means plumed or the feathered serpent. The fiery flying serpent is what you see in the Bible. Leviathan, the dragon, Satan. All of these represent Lucifer, the fiery flying serpent. Now, it is said that Quetzalcoatl, the god, was killed on a cross. And I want you to think about that. Because there are those out there, and by the way, it's not just Quetzalcoatl. Orpheus died on a cross. Krishna died or was killed on a cross. Krishna was. Quetzalcoatl, dying on a cross. Now, I want you to ponder this for a minute, because you see this dead Jesus here on a cross? That's not Jesus. It is not Jesus. The real Jesus, number one, is not on the cross. He's not continually and perpetually dying for your sins. He died one time and one time only. And any religious organization that believes in the hellish doctrine of transubstantiation, which means that the wafer and the wine literally become the body and blood of Jesus Christ, which is sacrificed all over again, that doctrine is an abomination. I hate it. Because it seeks to re-crucify the Son of God afresh and bring him to an open shame. Makes me angry. Jesus said in Matthew 24:24, there shall arise false Christs and false prophets and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Here's a false Christ here, Krishna. Here's another one, Orpheus. Here's another one, Quetzalcoatl. These are false Christs. There is, you can look this article up on Wikipedia. Look up two articles. Number one, the dying God. Number two, what's it called? Something like 12 gods that died on a cross. And what you have is you have the atheist out there who looks at these mythological stories and says, well, your Jesus is just another one of these mythological gods who died on a cross. So what makes him special above Quetzalcoatl or Orpheus or Krishna or Dionysus? Because all of these gods died on a cross. And what they believe is, they believe that the story of Jesus was a myth perpetuated by the early disciples based upon stories out of other civilizations' mythology of their God dying on a cross. You know what I think it really is? Nehushtan. Nehushtan. When Moses made the brazen serpent and put it on a brass pole, and he lifted it up for all to see, they kept that brazen serpent on that pole. They kept it. Years down the road, we find the people of Israel bowing before this image they called Nehushtan and burning incense to it. And Hezekiah saw it and he said, "Oh, I'm not going to have that. That's a mockery." And he destroyed it. You know what I think it, you know what I think it means? I think it means that in every one of us, in our DNA, there's a cross. And on that cross, in that DNA, turn to Romans 7. Let me read it to you. The word flesh in the King James Bible, I think, is always a reference to DNA. Because that's what makes us flesh, is our DNA. So you look at Romans 7. Verse 18. Uh-oh, hit the button here. Uh-oh, I went too far. Get ready. You're going to like this. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, in my genes, in my DNA, dwelleth no good thing. Dwelleth there, lives there. For to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I find not. So he says in verse 20, now if I do that what I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. We are predisposed in our very genetic makeup. We're predisposed to sin. We're born into sin. We're going to sin. It's in our genes. And there is dwelling in our flesh no good thing. This is why Paul said, I am crucified with Christ. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Paul said, I bear in my body the marks of the Lord Jesus Christ. I think our chromosomes represent the cross. And I think that in our chromosomes, in our DNA, there is something in us that needs to be crucified. Kill it. How is it that you and I are finally going to get victory over all of our sins and transgressions? We got to die. There is all throughout the Bible pictures of this. In Joshua chapter 8, verse 29, the king of Ai, he hanged on a tree until eventide. Cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree. And as soon as the sun was down, Joshua commanded that they should take his carcass down from the tree and cast it at the entering of the gate of the city and raise thereon a great heap of stones that remain unto this day. By the way, I got to show you this. You see that verse? I'm leaning over to grab my wallet here. Hang on. Ah, come on, get out of there. I have in my wallet a picture of the great heap of stones that's covering up this king who was hung on a tree. You see it? Dun, 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 dun! That's the great heap of stones that's covering up the one that they hung on a tree until the evening, and then they took him down, and then they buried him. Are you catching that? Joshua chapter 10, it came to pass when they brought out those kings unto Joshua, five kings. Five is the number for death. They brought those kings unto Joshua, and Joshua called for all the men of Israel and said unto the captains of the men of war, which went with him, come near, put your feet upon the necks of these kings. And they came near and put their feet upon the necks of them. And Joshua said unto them, fear not, nor be dismayed. Be strong and of good courage, for thus shall the Lord do to all your enemies against whom ye fight. The last enemy that shall be destroyed is death, by the way. And afterward, Joshua smote them and slew them and hanged them on five trees. And they were hanging upon the trees until the evening. And it came to pass at the time of the going down of the sun that Joshua commanded, and they took them down off the trees and cast them into the cave wherein they had been hid, and laid great stones in the cave's mouth, which remain until this very day. All of this is a picture of the Antichrist. Cursed is anyone who hangs on a tree. And then we have another one. Absalom met the servants of David, and Absalom rode upon a mule, and the mule went under the thick boughs of a great oak, and his head caught hold of the oak, and he was taken up between the heaven and the earth, and the mule that was under him went away. Well, how did he get caught up in that tree, in that oak tree? By the way, the Druids, what tree do they worship? The oak tree. Now you know why. Do you know why the Druids and a lot of other of the pagan priesthoods from all over the earth, do you know why they worship trees? Because they believed that hidden inside the tree was their God. Their God was hidden inside that tree. And so their religion said, our God is in there and we need to set him free. So let's take our chisel and our hammers and let's chisel away that tree until our God appears. You get it, don't you? They carved out an image of their God from the tree. Their God was inside that tree, and it took the hands and the work of men to bring their God back to life. That's the Antichrist, people. Why did Absalom get his head caught in an oak tree? It's because Absalom had the face of a man and the hair of a woman. Wow. So he's there hanging, right? And 2 Samuel 18:10, a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, behold, I saw Absalom hanged in an oak. And Joab said unto the man that told him, and behold, thou sawest him. Why didst thou not smite him there to the ground? And I would have given thee 10 shekels of silver and a girdle. Because, you know, every guy wants a girdle, right? Okay. A girdle, not a girdle. Girdles are for girls. Girdles are for men. Okay. And the man said unto Joab, though I should receive 1,000 shekels of silver in mine hand, yet would I not put forth mine hand against the king's son. What are you saying? What are you, crazy? You can give me $1 million, and I'm not touching him. For in our hearing, the king charged thee and Abishai and Ittai, saying, beware that none touch the young man Absalom. Otherwise, I should have wrought falsehood against my own life, and for there is no matter hid from the king, and thou wouldest thyself have set thyself against me. Then said Joab, I may not tarry thus with thee. And he took 3 darts in his hand. Why 3? Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom. By the way, when you join the Masonic Lodge, you are struck 3 times. Once in the neck, once in the left chest, and the 3rd time in the head. John F. Kennedy was 46 years old, 46, number of chromosomes. 46 years old on 11/22, that's 33. Kennedy was struck in the neck. Connolly was struck in the left chest. Kennedy was struck in the head. Just like in the Masonic Lodge. When they attempted to kill Ronald Reagan, it was March 30th, 3:30. Jim Brady was struck in the head. A Washington, D.C. police officer was struck in the neck. Reagan was struck in the left chest. Bum, bum, bum. See, I believe in spirits involved in a conspiracy. I do. Anyway, Joab took 3 darts in his hand and thrust them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive and in the midst of the yoke. And 10 young men, it's always the law, it's always dominion, 10 kings that bear Joab's armor compassed about and smote Absalom and slew him. Joab blew the trumpet. Look at that. And the people returned from pursuing after Israel, for Joab held back the people. And they took Absalom and cast him into a great pit in the wood and laid a very great heap of stones upon him. There's that heap of stones. And all Israel fled, everyone to his own, to his tent. This Bible gets more amazing every time I read it. And Colossians tells us, you being dead in your sins and the uncircumcision of your flesh, hath he quickened together with him, having forgiven you all trespasses, blotting out the handwriting of ordinances that was against us, and took it out of the way, nailing it to his cross, and having spoiled principalities and powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it. What does that verse mean? It means that the symbolism of Christ on the cross was Christ defeating our enemies. That no good thing that is in us, the man of sin, who is the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, crucifying and destroying that man of sin in us, making a show of his enemies openly, triumphing over our enemies in the cross. The swastika is a symbol of the rise and the domination of the fourth kingdom. To me, it shows the X chromosome with something added to it. And that something, from what I can see, is the fourth kingdom mingling themselves with the seed of men. The swastika is coming back. It's on the rise. And its dominance and the power of its symbolism. Just like they accepted it in the days of Adolf Hitler. Because before Hitler really gave it this bad connotation. A lot of Germans were familiar with the swastika, and they knew that it was a sign of like good luck and prosperity. And so, I mean, you got to understand how they see it, how they think. You know, we can't think that the Germans were going, well, that's a swastika, that's bad. How do you know? Because Hitler, to them, the swastika was a symbol of good fortune. Why not accept it? Why not follow it? So why is a t-shirt company trying to bring it back? Why not just let it slip off into obscurity? Because it is a very powerful and potent symbol of the rise of the Antichrist, the rise of the fourth kingdom, and the mingling of those spiritual powers mingling with the seed of men. By the way, do you know what happens when those four winds finally blow? They breathe life into the dry bones of the nation of Israel. And they gather us together to meet the Lord in the air. Love it. Even so, come quickly, Lord Jesus. Got a new Watchman broadcast coming out this Sunday. I'm going back to try to finish the Capstone series. You remember that, don't you? The Capstone series? Yeah. I'm going to go back and try to finish it. May take a while, but I'm going to give it my best shot. All right? I love you. You're the reason why we do what we do here at Bethel. And you're worth it. You really are. Come and visit us sometime, some weekend when, you know, not everybody's here for homecoming. Come and visit us and join us and see what it's like to just be here at Bethel. I hope it will be a good experience for you, all right? Hey, I love you. We'll see you. Think Bible.